Welcome to the Everyday Game Changers podcast. You will hear from everyday people in business, music, community, and more who are changing the game. And now your host, marketing expert, and personal branding specialist, Varian McQueen.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Everyday Game Changers podcast. I am your host, Varian McQueen, and I have a special guest in the building. You know how we do our Everyday Game Changers, talking to everyday people changing the game in music, business, community, and more. And today is no different. I have a singer-songwriter, LA-based, great music. She got some records that Play Pretend is my favorite, but she got a new record too, though. We're going to talk about Allie Angel. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I want to I love talking to music artists because everybody's journey is completely different. Mm-hmm. So how has being in LA shaped your sound and you just even getting involved in doing music in general?
Yeah, I think, so I'm from LA, born and raised.
Okay.
I went to school in New Orleans at Tulane and I came back. And okay. So I think being from LA automatically gives you a big advantage in the sense that you grow up around the industry and around the community, and your network naturally is just kind of already built in a little bit. So you kind of aren't starting from like ground zero in terms of who you know and who you can find. There's always family members who know somebody who works at this label or works in music in this, and you know, people to send things to and make connections with. So I feel lucky to be from LA in that sense. And I also feel like growing up in LA and seeing so many people pursue music and creative stuff in general makes it seem a lot more realistic. I feel like coming from other places where the industry isn't as, you know, popular to be a part of, it seems more difficult to like dip your toes into. But for me, growing up, being surrounded by people doing it, it didn't seem as daunting. And I'd always done music growing up. So it was kind of like, why not just get started and do it?
So would you consider LA still like that go-to place? I feel like everybody in not just music, but probably entertainment and just in the entertainment space in general, like once you made it to LA, it's like, okay, I'm here. Is it like that still?
I think LA is probably one of the best places to be in Nashville for music. I actually lived there for a summer and I interned at a publishing management company called 30 Tigers.
Okay.
And that was a great learning experience for me about the business side of music and being there. I mean, Nashville has so many talented people. You think LA is filled with talented people, but Nashville is like a smaller version and it's like every single person you run into is insanely talented musician, songwriter. Who works a completely different job, but is trying to do music. And it's super inspiring and energetic. So I think, you know, Nashville or LA, and I personally would also be open to moving to Nashville or living there for a bit in the future, just because I think my music fits in a lot with the sound.
Got it. What would you say? Like, so I'm listening to you. I'm listening to the Play Pretend, and it's got like, I don't want to put it in a genre because I feel like it could cross over to a couple different genres. What would you call your lane? What would your lane be?
Yeah. So I think for Play Pretend and Extra Wild, the one I just put out, a lot of my stuff is very retro soul.
Right. I like that. Retro soul.
Yeah. And there's kind of like a big market or medium market for that in music that's kind of has its own popularity, like Blake Street Dive, the band, or Lawrence, or The Dip, or Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, even Alabama Shakes has some of that. Leon Bridges does a lot of retro soul stuff with his debut album. So a lot of that where, you know, they incorporate a bunch of the horns and the brass and like the classic soul sound production
elements.
So I love all that. But then also some of my stuff is a little bit more twangy, like... You know, my voice naturally has some twang sometimes and twangy, a little bit alt-rocky. So,
Retro
some of the other
soul
stuff that's coming
out. I like
that.
Because when I'm listening to play Pretend was the one that like grabbed me right away. And mm-hmm. maybe because it's the first one I played, right? So I played that one first, but I'm a visual guy. So when I'm like listening to music, I'm seeing visuals. And this is just like, oh man, this song, I could see it on a Netflix movie. Just, it feels like it belongs in the film somewhere. Like at a certain point in somebody's life, they playing this song and it's on a movie, on a Lifetime movie, Netflix movie. It gave me that vibe.
I love that. I want to get it in sync. I want to get some placements. That's where the money is.
That's a fact. So talk to me about your first introduction to music, though.
Yeah. So, my parents raised me on great music, too. My mom has great taste. So I grew up in the car listening to Rolling Stones and Dixie Chicks and the Beatles, Elton John, Eric Clapton, everything. So I've always been exposed to great music and always interested in it. I grew up doing theater all throughout school. I was a musical theater gal. I picked up guitar in third grade. I really wanted to play guitar, and everyone told my parents, you know, always, no, start them out on piano. Guitar is too hard. They always quit. It hurts and they won't, but I never quit. I kept doing it. And I kept doing music. And then in college, I've always been a writer, and I started writing songs a lot more in college because I felt that there was more I could write about.
Got it. Makes sense.
In terms of experience. And then I was majoring in digital media production, and I was thinking I might go into TV writing and film because, you know, writing either any kind of story. So it, you know, both intertwined for me. But the more and more I was in New Orleans and meeting other people, I was always drawn back to the music. And I took a songwriting class across the street at Loyola. I started playing with these guys in a band, and we did a couple gigs in New Orleans. And that was the first time I heard my originals fully fleshed out with a band. And I was like, oh my God, I love performing. I've missed this. And I love songwriting and like producing my songs and hearing it fully fleshed out. And I was like, okay, when I move back, I'm gonna try and do this.
Yeah. Got it. So you produce and you write your stuff.
So I co-produce. My two main guys I work with are amazing. I met them both. One of them through a family friend, and one of them actually went to Tulane also, but I didn't know him until graduation. Yeah.
Got it. That's dope. So like, cause I heard you mention Logic. So, you know, when used to produce, that's where I produced that. And Logic. I'm a Logic guy.
Cause you did production too, right?
Oh man. Everything. Songwriting, production. We doing some scoring now. I never scored nothing before. So it's like, it's interesting where music has taken me on this journey, but I've just got a passion for it. You know, I've tried to run away from it sometimes because I'm just like, it's too much. It's like overwhelming. It's like, do you give up? Do you keep going? And something always just pulls me back in.
And
one capacity or another, whether it's, I like the aspect of being behind the scenes though, rather than be the artist. Like, that pressure of being the artist in a social media climate now, no, it's not for me.
Oh my God.
I could only imagine.
Oh God, it's so hard. I relate so much to what you're saying too about like feeling like you want to give up in the sense. Yeah. And I just started, you know, I've only been really doing it for 2 years, but especially now that I'm putting out my music and promoting it, it's definitely like, it's a grind. And it's also, especially in the beginning, you put in so much in terms of finances and effort and energy and outreach, and it's vulnerable. And then what you get back in return is often so little compared to that it can be really discouraging. But for me, it's kind of like I'll send out a bunch of email pitches to playlisters on Spotify or, you know, random people I find. And, you know, I might not get any replies back. And then a week later, I'll get one reply back and they'll be like, I loved your stuff. I love your vibe. I'm totally adding this to my playlist. And then something like that will kind of recharge me.
Okay.
And I'll be like, okay, you know what? Yeah.
It's not bad.
This is right. As long as like, you know, you find the right people in your audience and like the right people who will enjoy your stuff. That's what keeps me motivated to keep going when everyone else ghosts you, you know.
Well, you have a new fan in me.
Thank you.
I'm a big lyric guy. So I'm just like, I mean, of course, as a producer, I'm listening sonically to the music, but I love great lyrics. So I'm just like, oh man, it talks to me a little different, right? So
totally.
So in this space, you said you went and you interned in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
What made you want to intern?
So that was also kind of, you know, the 4 years when I was at Tulane, I was still juggling in between what I really wanted to pursue in terms of entertainment. So I've always done music, but for a while I kind of was like, I'm not good enough to be like the singer myself. Like maybe I can do something in music, but you know, like you're saying, more behind the scenes. And so I got the internship in Nashville in music publishing and management, but it was great to be in that scene, but I still felt not fully satisfied, like sitting at the desk, sending emails, helping send out flyers and CDs. I was like, I kind of want to like be the one making
whose stuff we sending out, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yes.
That's dope. So no, that's dope because I always like that aspect of you doing that internship generally is going to help you as the artist because you had some on the job training before.
Exactly. So. And seeing the other side of like all the stuff that goes into like the publishing world and outreach and pitching. And, you know, I also had an internship with music supervision at NBC in TV music.
Okay.
And that I learned so much from too, because especially nowadays when you don't make as much streaming wise for artists, it's so important to get placements in like TV and film, because that's really where like solid money is. And I learned so much at that internship because I learned, you know, what the supervisors are looking for. I learned, you know, what not to send in the email or what to send, all of that. So, you know, all of those experiences were so helpful because I feel like I know the business side of it in a way that really helps me as an artist, not just be like blindsided from all that.
Of course. I know. And I tell people, I'm like, man, people forget that this is a business, right?
Right. So yes.
The aspect of it that you got both sides of that. I think that's really going to help you go far because I got my first record deal with Epic Records when I was 18.
Wow.
I never wanted to be the artist. I was just a better artist than all my friends who did music. So I kind of got pushed to the forefront, but I really just wanted to write and produce. Yeah, I really just wanted to write and produce. So that was 18, got my first deal with Epic Records. I'm like, man, this is where Michael Jackson was. I'm pleased to be at Epic Records. And it was just like the A&R who found me, he got fired. And it was just like, so, you know, we're going in a different direction. You didn't spend none of the money. You're free to go, basically. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I didn't even get my next deal until I was maybe 21 with Universal. And it was just like the same thing. You know, the A&R who found me. Universal now is a bigger conglomerate than just Epic was, right? So, you know, I'm just like a number up there. You know, they got Lil Wayne. They got big people ahead of me. Right. That I'm just like, so I literally had to go and audition for a label I was already signed to.
Wow. Like to stay on it.
Talk about embarrassing. Not even just to stay on it. It was just like the A&R signed me, but the big suits didn't even know who I was. But they
My gosh.
Let you know, he's no longer with the company, but we do have your paperwork that he signed you in. Show us what you got. And I was like, what?
Oh my gosh.
It was the most awkward experience in my life.
Wow.
A bunch of suits sitting around a table with a CD player, put the instrumental on, and they just like perform. And I'm like right here? Like, just like, yeah. No. They like cue the music up and perform one of the songs. So I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is nerve-wracking. So I'm performing, I'm giving them all my energy, I'm standing at the table, and it's just no reaction. It's just like I'm in there with a room full of mannequins. It's just like,
stop.
So like halfway through, he stops and he's like, okay, we're gonna sit with the music and we'll get back to you
no
in about 6 months.
That 6 months.
just like,
what did they think you were going to do for 6 months with an answer like that?
And I'm just like, I get out of that meeting. I call my lawyer immediately. I'm like, you will never guess what just happened to me. He's like, what's going on, man? Like, calm down. I'm like, I just had to perform for a record label I'm already signed to. He's like, well, what happened? And I'm like, well, the guy that signed me, he's no longer with the company. So they trying to turn me over to this new PR and new management and new everything. And I don't want none of their people because I don't know these people. And they told me they're going to sit with the music for 6 months. He's just like, wow. So he's like, send me your contract over and let me just work and see what we can do. But I was so uncomfortable at this point. I'm just like, I'm either going to be stuck in this deal forever.
Yeah.
Or my music's never going to come out and I'm still going to be stuck in this deal.
So your music, was it in like a limbo during that period where you couldn't do anything with it?
Exactly that.
Oh.
So I have fans that have been following me since the Epic Records deal. So from 18 all the way to 21.
Wow.
Just waiting for like something to come out under like, because I couldn't release anything. So it was just like, I was doing little mixtapes to try to get under the radar to just keep them active. But it was just like, now you can't release nothing. So my lawyer was like, look, for the next 8 months, I need you off social media. I need you not tweeting, no YouTube, no Facebook, no nothing. I need you to be like so under the radar that even your mom forgot you was online. Like,
no. Gosh. And so that's what you did?
That's what I did.
And then what happened after that?
What happened is, you know, as long as you're signed to a record label, you get what's called the annual payment, right? So if you don't make no money all year in your contract, you at least get this. My annual payment, I think, was like 12 grand or something like that. Very little. I'm like, who could live off $12,000 a year?
I mean, it's they forced you to do it too.
So I was just like, so my lawyer is like, so the best thing we can hope for is that you stay under the radar. And then once your renewal period comes back, they miss the annual payment. That's the only way you're going to get out of this contract. So I'm like, oh my gosh, please, Universal's missed this payment. Like, I've never been so praying not to receive some money. Like,
yeah.
It was just like, they missed the annual payment. Yes. They missed the annual payment. We settled out of court for 20 grand. And I feel like after that situation, I was blackballed.
That is the craziest thing ever.
So like literally I had other people interested into me after the Universal deal, but every label that I went to afterwards had distribution through Universal.
Oh my gosh.
So if I went to Sony was still distributed by Universal. If I went to Columbia, they were still distributed by Universal. So I felt like when my name came up, like sirens and bells and whistles went off, because everything would be good up until it's like, let's sign.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, well, I think we're going to go in a different direction. I'm like, my lawyer's like, yo, you've been blackballed. It's Universal, bro.
Wow.
Thank God they settled out of court. They don't want that on their record. A lawsuit. Like, right. So, of course, they're going to settle, but you're not going to ever get a record deal again. Right. So I was just like, you know what? For the fans that have been with me all of this time, I'm finally going to put an album out independently.
Amazing.
And we did so well. And it was just like such a weight lifted off my shoulder. I had turned 30 years old and I'm like, I can retire. I'm retiring. And I was just like, oh, I'm done being an artist. We put the album out and then I just started writing and producing for other artists. And it was just like such a weight lifted off my shoulder.
Wow.
But the business aspect is so crazy.
Gosh.
That's what I tell artists. It's just like, you know, you just a hungry artist want to get signed and you know, you think it's a big deal, but it's not what they think it is when you get signed.
Yeah. Like,
nobody goes into it and negotiates their masters when they get their first record. It just don't happen. You can't. You got no leverage. So that's what I always tell new artists. I'm like, look, you know, I see all these disgruntled artists come out later about how mad they are with their record label. And I'm like, listen, they bet money on you. Right. You didn't have no leverage to get your masters in the beginning. They didn't even know if they was going to make money off of you. So I've kind of, as I got older, I understood both sides of that dynamic of the big bad record label and the artist. So, but I get both sides. I get the artist aspect as far as creativity and let me just do my art. And then I get, if this was my money or if artists actually had to go into a partnership with a label where each person was putting up 50%, it would be a lot less artists making music.
Right.
So I get it.
So true.
I get it. So
yeah.
But it is what it is. But talk to me about your process.
Yeah.
You get in the studio and what's an alley session look like when we walk in?
I usually write on my own. And I usually write on guitar. Sometimes I write on piano, more of a guitar player though. And then I'll bring the songs to, so I work with two different guys. One of them, this guy, Oliver Roman, who is a family friend. He's awesome. And he has his own studio in his parents' garage in the Valley. And we work out of that. And he's got great equipment. He's got like a console from the 1970s and like just a bunch of fun stuff, great mics, everything. And like how Play Pretend came about and Extra Wild. So I brought the songs to Oliver and then this guy, Evan and Lucas, who are my bassist and drummer, and they are all in a band together and they became my makeshift band over the years. Nice. And they also record everything with me. So I brought those songs to them. And we started playing shows. So they were kind of conceived in terms of like the whole structure. So we figured out, you know, the drum part and the bass part and the guitar parts and everything together and how we would play it live. And then we recorded it based off of those structures, which is nice because it has a really concise, like full band sound because like, that's how we did it, you know, we didn't do it apart. Like we recorded bass and drums together on tape. We put everything through tape also. Yeah. So
ADATS?
I don't know.
Probably ADATS. That's like, when I used to record as a guy, I walked in his studio and I've heard about this engineer and they like, you gotta go to this guy. Actually, Tennessee. It was in Bristol, Tennessee. And he goes and records and I'm looking for like his Pro Tools setup. And he's like, you didn't bring any DAT tapes?
Well, he thought you were gonna?
Yeah. He's like, why didn't you bring any DAT tapes to your session? I'm like, I didn't know he was, what's a DAT? What's a DAT?
I don't even know what that is.
So people that's been doing this music thing for a long time, they love the sound, the warmth that the ADAT tapes gives you.
Yeah.
That you can't get in Logic Pro. And
totally.
So I was just like, I was so just in this studio experience learning because I'm like, man, I felt so ignorant that I didn't show up with my ADAT.
I get that completely. I feel like I've learned so much and I still don't know so much. Like even every time I'm recording with Oliver or Andrew White's, my other producer who I've done one song that's coming out with and more songs, like they just know so much. And every time I go, it's like, I'm in school.
School in session, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me about this EP.
Yeah. So
what's the name of it? I don't have a name.
Self-titled Sally Angel. I kind of wanted to go with like a very classic vibe just because so much of the music is the retro soul classic style.
Got it.
And you know, the six songs themselves aren't connected in some sort of theme necessarily. It's of like, basically I took the best songs that I feel that I'd written so far and the ones that I'd played with my band. And we were like, let's produce them. Let's put work out. And so it kind of became sonically, they all work together, but it's not like a story throughout the whole piece. So I was like, let's just,
it still sounds cohesive though. You saying
still sounds cohesive for sure.
Got it.
And yeah, so Play Pretend's on it also. Extra Wild. Okay. I'm a Ram. The song that I put out is actually just an Al Green cover. So that was just a single.
Yeah.
And then, the other songs are Hideaway, Beck and Call, Middle Name, and Loving You Lately. And yeah, they were all written over the past 2 years.
Okay.
And all of them were produced with Oliver. We co-produced. So, you know, I like to be there for every part of it.
Of course.
You know, we track all the vocals, we comp on the vocals. We'll sit down. He does all the lead guitar stuff, and we'll sit down and mess with solo stuff, and he'll play something and I'll be like, oh, that's good, but maybe do this instead or that.
Okay.
And we'll work through that.
So you really hands-on.
I love to be hands-on with all. I love the production side. I want to get better at it myself because I think it's just as equally a part of the songwriting.
Right.
You know.
So when you write in records, right, do you I love a good title, right? To a record. Do you have a title in mind, or are you just always pinning the lyrics and then the title is last?
I think the title, it depends. I mean, I usually just start writing aimlessly. I write, so I'm usually find a chord progression that I like, and then I just always have my voice memos on and I go from there and mess with melodies, and then random words come up just from subconscious. Yeah. I feel like sometimes just based off of whatever I was talking about with somebody previously, and those words just come up, and then that's what starts to form lyrics. And
right.
sometimes I just like the sound of certain vowels over certain notes better. Mm. And then I'll use that to guide the way I'm writing. Cause I feel like with lyrics, I think lyrics are so important, but I think they're not only important in terms of like the meaning of what you're saying, but also the sound of the lyrics, because I think certain words sound better, like in certain keys or certain styles or whatever, or based on like your voice and like, oh, am I going to be able to belt that note if it's like an E
sound,
or is it going to be easier if it's like an O, or things like that, that like also kind of change the trajectory of the song.
Of course. So that's dope. So when can we expect this?
So June 17th, the full EP comes out.
Really? That's the day after my birthday.
Oh my gosh.
Gemini. So
Gemini.
June 17th.
Gemini, I'm a Sag.
It's a perfect date.
It's a good date.
Me and Tupac was born on the same day.
Oh.
Really?
Who was I born on the same day as? I don't remember, but it's a lot of fun Sagittarius female singers.
Of course. I agree with that. So like
Whitney, Miley.
I was going to get to that. Give me some of your influences. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm super influenced by a lot of the retro soul artists. So like Lake Street Dive is a huge influence. I love Dan Auerbach.
Okay.
And I love, you know, he was the Black Keys, but I love all of his solo stuff. Like, he uses a lot of horns, and his label Easy Eye Sound. I love all the artists on that.
Okay.
In terms of other inspirations, I really love Haim. I love
Haim.
Oh my gosh, they're great. They're three give sisters.
Some,
you, really? You don't know
give
Haim?
Me some, give me some, man. I'm
oh
always
my gosh.
Looking for new people. Haim, I gotta check
H-A-I-M.
Them out.
They
H-A-I-M.
Are from the Valley also. They're Valley girls. They went to my middle school, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, they
perfect.
Did they win the Grammy for their last album? I know they were nominated.
Okay.
It's called Woman in Music Part 3. It's amazing.
Okay. Check it out.
So I love Haim. I love Jade Bird. I love Margot Price. I love Sturgill Simpson. I love Prince. You're wearing your Prince. Prince is a huge inspiration for me. That's him back there. That
I see.
Photo, yeah. He also, I love that he merges different. Like one of my favorite songs from him called Cream is super twangy, and he uses a cowbell, and it's like
nice.
Country vibes. And I love artists that do that, like merge different sounds, like Elton John.
Of course.
He's probably one of my biggest inspirations in terms of his melody styles and songwriting. I mean, he doesn't write the lyrics, but like just the way his melodies move and the catchiness of them, I love.
That's dope.
I could go on forever.
Nah, I just wanted to get some perspective on your palette.
Yeah.
What advice can you give to somebody, right? That's like, they see what you're doing. They're like, man, she's doing good online, and she got a good following on social media, and she writes great music and sings great music. What piece of advice can you give to that person that's just like, I want to do this music thing. I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. Should I not be an artist? Should I be behind the scenes, an executive, a writer, a producer, what kind of advice could you give to that person that's stuck?
I feel like, I mean, you always have to go with what your gut is telling you. And I think starting off, I think doing what you want to do in life is always going to be scary and uncomfortable, but it's like when you put yourself in those situations where you deal with the uncomfortability of it and you just go for it, it's always after that you're like, oh, I'm so glad I did that. Like, you know, when I started out, I didn't know where to play shows. I started doing open mics or like at Crave Cafe, like, and I just bring my guitar and sing songs. And, you know, half of those songs aren't even ones that, you know, I still play today or produce, you know, but you start somewhere and, you know, you're never going to be great off the bat, like in terms of like, you know, the first song you write is probably not going to be what's on your album or your first single per se, but you know, you just got to keep going for it and like putting yourself out there, going to do shows. Shows have been where I met so many people that are still in my network and like learn about different opportunities and different places to play or different songwriter circles and things like that. And just like not caring and putting yourself out there. I think every time I feel like I'm held back, it's because I don't make this video or write this or do this because I'm thinking about how somebody would perceive it or judge it or critique it. And then when you allow yourself to just kind of live in the vulnerability of it and do what you like, then you realize, you know, there's always going to be like negativity, but like,
of course,
you'll attract the positivity because people will be like, oh, I really like that. Or that was cool. I love that song, or respond to your story or like your post. And that can be enough to help you realize like, oh yeah, I feel good. You know, I should keep doing what is true to me.
Okay. So like the community in LA, how important is that around this EP that you releasing in June?
I mean, so important in terms of, you know, my bandmates and my co-producers and, you know, they're the glue for me because they're who I perform with. They're who I record with, you know, when I need advice on the direction to take a song and helping with rewrites and stuff. And then, you know, music is like so much smaller of a community than you'd think.
Agreed.
Being in LA and playing, you know, the same venues and different shows, I keep running into so many of the same artists and it's definitely a small community. And you really, to be as involved in it as you can only helps you and benefits you, you know, like going out to other artists' shows. You know, I always notice when people come to my shows. And so I'm like, well, if I support this artist show, they're going to really appreciate it. And then maybe we can do a show in the future together and get a bill set up. And then we might be able to play at this bigger venue because we have more to offer, you know,
right.
Or, you know, they'll support you and repost your story or your single or, you know, somebody who follows them that's another musician might see that through their story, reach out to you, be like, I want to co-write or I want to have you on this podcast or whatever, you know, and just, you know, I think it's always better to be open and say yes to all opportunities.
I like that.
Always.
I like that, man.
I'm not saying no.
I'm an advocate for that, man, because
totally.
I'm here. I'm in Miami and it's different. It's
What's it like there in terms of music?
Like, what you gonna do for me if I do this for you type? So it's like, I love the there's a big creative community here of just photographers and videographers and music art. It's a community. It's probably not as big as how LA is. I would say it's like a very micro version of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting better. It's just that it's not a music hub, right? It's a vacation hub. People come here, they go to Miami, they go to South Beach, they go to Bayside, and then they get their selfies, and then they on a plane back wherever they came from.
Right.
So, I think it's from a music standpoint, I think it's going to be the biggest hub for Latin music.
That's what
So Sony stationed here. And they're doing a lot of stuff with the Latin artists. So I think just because of the space, you know, it's a big Latin community in Florida.
Definitely.
So it makes sense. But I wanted to definitely get you on here. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, this we're gonna follow your journey. So you already got a new fan. So whatever you post up, you got automatic reposts coming. So
That really means a lot.
Yeah.
Every repost, every playlist ad is like huge.
Yeah, I got you. I got a couple playlists that I curate. So I'm throwing some stuff of yours on there and send that to you. But I appreciate you for coming.
On the Everyday
Game Changers podcast. I am your host, Vera McQueen, and this episode was definitely no different. We are excited for the new music and the new EP coming in June. So I want to thank you, and we'll definitely be in touch.
Yes, absolutely. I'm excited to hear about the rest of your journey, too, and hearing your story. It's so interesting. It's crazy.
I think that's why it's so good when I talk to artists, because I can play on a lot of different levels, not just the creative aspect, but just the journey in general. Like, you know, this was never...
It's wild.
I think we took it as far as I could go, and I was fine with that, and I just wanted to let people know it wasn't about me quitting music. It was just about me finding where I belonged in music.
Exactly. Sometimes... you always end up where you're supposed to be, but the way you get there isn't necessarily what you think it's going to be.
Exactly.
You just have to trust that.
So I appreciate you. Thank you, Allie. Enjoy your weekend. I will
you
get
too.
This together and tell them everybody where they can follow you at.
Yeah. So my Instagram is Allie Angel Music. It's A-L-I-A-N-G-E-L Music. My website's Allie Angel Music also. I'm Allie May Angel on TikTok. It's my middle name. So there's another Allie Angel musician out there, but it's a Middle Eastern man.
Right?
Yes. I don't think anyone's gonna see it and be like, wait, is this the voice I heard?
I seen it and I'm like, that don't add up. Like,
no, it doesn't add up. No.
But I had to find the songs that I knew, so that was easier to be. But I did see the guy with the dark hair. Looks very Mulan-ish.
Yes. I think he's like, he definitely speaks French, I think.
Okay.
And we'll do a collab in the future, the Allie Angels.
The Allie Angel collab. That's dope. I appreciate you. Thank you.
I appreciate
you. We'll definitely be in touch. I'm going to get this episode up, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Everyday Game Changers podcast with Barry and McQueen. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. If you enjoyed the show, leave us a review. Follow us on Instagram at Everyday Game Changers or on our official website, www.everydaygamechangers.com.